Annabelle. My life is different now. I'm not the same without you. I'm evolving at a really astounding rate of speed into something way cooler than what I was before.
Donald Fagen has spent much of his career in a creative collaboration of one kind or another. With Walter Becker, he developed a reputation for laid-back, wry songwriting and crystalline production with the band they co-founded, Steely Dan. Beginning in the early 80s, Mr. Fagen transformed that reputation into a successful solo career, and he's since released four albums under his own name. The most recent, Sunken Condos, is his first since 2006. It's also his first solo record since completing his Nightfly trilogy. I'm very pleased that it has brought Donald Fagen to our show today, along with his most recent collaborator, Michael Enhardt, who served as the album's arranger and producer and is also featured as a soloist. Welcome to our show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Donald, you've recorded with many of the world's top session musicians, working with them instead of using a consistent band. And don't many of your records even feature a different band for each song?
Well, my partner and I went through a period, in the 70s when we were recording, where once in a while we'd compose a song and we knew we'd want a certain drummer or a certain bass player. So sometimes we'd have a different band come in.
Well, you've admitted to being a jazz snob, at least when you were younger.
Yeah.
And most of the jazz leaders like the idea of having a consistent band for a long time, mm-hmm. because there's a certain comfort zone. Were you working against that comfort zone?
But it was really out of desperation because Walter and I tried when we were pretty young to get a band together, but it just didn't happen for us. So we finally got our original band together, but although it was very energetic and they really put themselves into it, it wasn't exactly as versatile as we wanted it to be. So we started using session musicians.
And you said that one reason the Steely Dan record Aegis sounded the way it does is that you hired so many studio musicians to play on it. Did they all do exactly what you'd hoped they would?
No, actually, we let them have a certain amount of freedom. And Asia in particular, I think, sounded a certain way because at that time, session musicians, the style was changing. A lot of them were jazz musicians, essentially, with rhythm and blues training or vice versa. So the musicians we used at that time could do both, which hadn't been so previously.
Now, Michael, you and Donald first worked together 11 years ago on
sixteen.
16.
Yeah.
What was that? Two Against Nature?
Well, I started touring with Steely Dan in 96.
How old were you then, Michael?
I was 22.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And what instrument were you playing, basically?
Trumpet.
Uh-huh.
I also took some percussion on stage, but I was mostly leading the horn section, playing trumpet. And then once we started doing Two Against Nature, I remember I played some electric piano on that album and arranged. So it started spilling out a little there, and that was around 98.
And you do that on this album as well, although not always under your own name.
There's only one case where it's not my own name. Which is the drums credited to Earl Cook, but otherwise everything is credited to
Yeah,
me.
After he started playing the drums, he insisted on being called Earl Cook Jr. for some reason.
Well, because it sounds like one of those old drummers,
session drummers. Maybe. And as Donald was talking about R&B musicians with studio experience, it occurred to me that I come from a jazz family, and then so I'm basically a jazz musician with a lot of studio experience.
One of the leading jazz bassists, Jay Linhart.
Yes, who when he started, he was playing with Oscar Peterson and other people. And then
what is he, your grandfather?
What?
Who's your granddad, huh?
Who's that?
Jay Linhart?
Oh, no. He's my dad.
Oh, he's your dad.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, he was doing a lot of session work in the 70s once he had the family, but there's a combination, you know, the mix between jazz and rock and then studio work. So I think that was something that Donald and I hit it off with because of my sort of closeness to the jazz world.
Donald, okay, that's enough. Stop talking, okay?
All right. Donald, you released 3 solo albums before Sunken Condos, and refer to those previous 3 as the Nightfly Trilogy.
Yeah.
Now, are they really related? There's a lot of autobiographical material in all of them. Is that
yeah.
how you see them as related?
Well, you know, when I did the first one, I never envisioned a trilogy, but that's the way it turned out. And I think when I started this one, I was actually trying to get away from that. But oddly enough, most of the tunes actually have a certain subjective aspect, I think.
But this one less so?
Well, there may be a couple songs that are maybe more in the Becker-Fagan sort of realm, in that they're more journalistic, you know.
And then there's also Isaac Hayes. What led you to do a cover version of Out of the Ghetto?
Well, Michael and I are both in a band called the Dukes of September with Boz Scaggs and Michael McDonald. And I was researching some. We do a lot of oldies, these kind of moldy oldies. And so I was researching some tunes, and I came across this tune, Out of the Ghetto, by Isaac Hayes. And I realized that the word ghetto was kind of... you know, most people knew it as only as a kind of inner city term, and I realized maybe I'd try to reclaim it for the Jews. So we did a little klezmer arrangement. And,
I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
You have violin and clarinet riffs in
and
it.
And accordion.
Yeah. So this way, you know, like Mila Kunis can be ghetto fabulous, you know.
So is that decision something that you made in the studio, or is it something that occurred to you while you were listening to the Isaac Hayes version, which is...
Yeah, no, when I heard it, I thought, you know, I just sort of zeroed in on that word ghetto. I said, you know what, we got to, I got to reclaim it for the Jews.
Your first solo, but your mother performed in the Catskills?
Yeah, actually, she was kind of the Shirley Temple of the Catskills. She performed from age 5 to 15 or so, every summer for tips, you know.
So do you two talk about that, the growing up in musical families?
Yeah, actually, we have a lot of similarities in that Mike's mother was a singer. And
a strong
mom.
Parallel. She sang a lot, kind of put it on hold to have kids.
Same with my mother, yeah.
But in your case, Donald, you say you were a self-taught singer.
Well, actually,
you grew up with a mother singing.
I started playing the piano, but I actually didn't start singing really professionally till I was in my 20s, really.
Mm-hmm. And that was because you were in a very successful group? Or you were...
Well, my partner, Walter Becker, and I looked around for a lead singer for a long time. We just never found anybody who had the right attitude, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I was elected.
And that's what I always loved about Donald singing is the attitude. He sounds like a musician, an instrumentalist who chose to sing.
That's a kind of an offhanded compliment.
No, well, but it's
I'm not
real.
Sure it is.
It's
I think some of the best singers
right.
in jazz
Louis
Armstrong,
were trumpet players, and it's obvious that they were, whether it was Armstrong or Roy Eldridge or Dizzy.
Actually, I love when I think my favorite singers are like Dizzy. People like, say, Mose Allison. He's a good singer, though. Yeah. But
he's a guy who came to singing after he established himself as a
exactly.
musician. As a pianist.
Right. I love, like, Hoagy Carmichael's voice and stuff like that.
And there's a lack of preciousness, usually. And there's a directness. Yeah. And I like that. I mean, in your case, you learned how to sing once, you know, during the
I
first
learned to
album.
Sing on the job.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
And well.
Well, let's take a little break. And when we come back, we will... continue this conversation with Donald Fagen and Michael Enhart. We're talking about their careers and the latest recording called Sunken Condos. Memorabilia, one of the songs on Donald Fagen's newest solo album called Sunken Condos. What does a song like that come from?
Well, the album's named Sunken Condos.
That was before Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, I guess I'm just prescient.
That good. I'll tell
you. You want to know who's going to win the race at Santa Anita tomorrow? Or?
Yeah, I do.
Who wins the Super Bowl?
I don't know.
Okay, well, anyway, Memorabilia was one of the songs that, because you've had big breaks between your albums.
Mm-hmm.
Are you writing songs during those times?
Yeah, I kind of, lately I've been writing between tours. You know, I can't write when I'm on the road, so when I come home, I'll write, I'll have ideas on the road, but when I come back, I'll sit down and work them out, and it takes a while. I'll write like twice as many songs as I need, because I throw a lot of stuff away, you know.
But do you try performing them and just realize they're not working?
No, I actually don't perform them till I'm in the studio. I don't like to actually sing them till I'm actually in the studio.
Your first solo album, The Nightfly, was a critical and commercial success, and since then it's gone on to gain a reputation in the pro audio community as an impeccably recorded album. How much do you get involved in the technical aspects of making a record?
Well, when Walter and I first started working at ABC Dunhill in L.A.,
the company no longer with us?
No. But there was a staff engineer named Roger Nichols who helped us a lot developing our sound. And Walter, his father was a hi-fi buff, as they used to say. And so Walter knew a lot about acoustics and sound, and I got into it after a while, and by the time I started making records of my own, I, you know, found my way around pretty
much. Well, I've read that sound engineers use IGY, one of the songs from The Nightfly, to check out the capabilities of speakers and even sound systems at giant venues. Some have called it the free bird of pro audio.
Yeah, well, yeah, actually, I've heard it being used, for acts, in big halls.
And I've walked into many studios, other sessions where it was on just to test things, and I kind of chuckled.
It was done on an early digital machine, a 3M digital machine, and it was kind of a novelty at the time.
Well, but that's a bit of a surprise, because in early digital, the big complaint was that the sound was always cold and people preferred to tape, and the old-timers all, like people who are already established like you, would have resisted going digital.
Well, Roger Nichols was very excited when the digital machines came out. We took a lot of care with it. The tracks were recorded as I recall, analog, and then transferred to the digital machines. And we took a lot of care to make sure it sounded good.
And what about your feelings about CDs and vinyl? Elvis Costello insists on having his records released on vinyl as well as CD.
Well, actually, yes, Sunken Condos is available in a vinyl edition as well. To me, it's just really I'm not into clicks and pops, and I just assume put on a CD myself. You know, it's like CD technology has improved a great deal, and I can hardly tell the difference.
You know, what's funny is they mastered it for iTunes, which is a recent thing where the resolution is even higher than CDs, and we had to listen to it to okay it, and that thing sounded great. So that's not even on. I mean, I love vinyl personally. But the resolution that they're doing now for even iTunes is kind of remarkable.
Because that's been a big complaint as well by many musicians.
Right.
Everything gets lost when you go MP3.
You know, analog still sounds warmer, but the truth is if something was recorded originally in a digital format, a transfer to vinyl to me there's something a little bogus about it.
It is strange.
Because you're not going to really add to it really that much. You know, I can see... There's some argument that vinyl may improve like some of the lower frequencies.
Well, I'm always reminded of a film that I saw some years back where Peter Cook played the devil, and while he is talking to the hero,
bedazzled,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And while he's talking to the hero, he's opening up the record jacket, pulling out the vinyl, putting a scratch.
Yeah.
He said, "Who do you think?"
I love that. Yeah,
he said, "Who do you think does this?"
Yeah, I love that. That's a great picture, actually.
Michael, Sunken Condos is the second album that Donald has recorded without Roger Nichols, who passed away, right?
Yes, he did. Yes.
And you've filled in that gap to some degree by engineering parts of this record. What does a good engineer bring to the recording process?
It's funny because I never identified with being an engineer. Actually,
but doesn't a producer really kind of like push the engineer?
Yes and no. Ideally, producing, I wouldn't engineer because I want my mind to be clear. I don't want to have to worry about the knobs and this and levels and making sure that things don't go over. The nature of doing this is that I had to do it, and it was fine. So I just sort of took extra, you know, care to make sure that everything was cool, and Donald would be there, and we'd make sure, hey, does this sound right? Is there any distortion? Does anything sound out of phase? I like engineering, but I prefer producing. In this case,
I pressured him to do lots of stuff because he was really good and really cheap.
Yeah, and I didn't mind. I did the majority of the engineering. We had a wonderful guy named Charlie Martinez who helped as well. We just made sure to move very carefully and slowly and make sure everything sounded right.
Well, in the old days, people went into these huge studios with tons of equipment. Now you can record an album on GarageBand in your home, can't you? So,
well,
not you.
Not exactly.
No, I don't know how good it would sound. You know, there's, when you mentioned about the Nightfly being used as a template, the funny thing, having mixed this album with Donald in close quarters, a lot of why that album is used, yeah, it's because of the way it's recorded, but I know that it's because of the way Donald mixes. And that's what sometimes people don't understand, is that he moves very meticulously. It's
for
about
instance,
impeccable balancing. No, go on.
For instance, yeah, on this album, I actually did the use GarageBand in order to arrange some of the tunes. But then there was a process of replacing a lot of those sounds, a lot of those sort of temporary sounds with better sounding instruments and so on.
Well, Michael, Donald has a rather smooth production style, but then I listened to some of the other things you've done, like Michael Lenhardt and the Avramina 7, and I hear a raw or grittier sound. So this is like the typical sideman. You adjust to whatever project you're involved with?
It's more that I just love sound. I love things that are super hi-fi, as well as things that are super lo-fi. I do find that after finishing
this
album...
He's a kid, you know.
After finishing this
album,
I'm
more... He's not a kid anymore.
He's
a kid.
Not as much of a kid as I used to be. I'm drawn... I love sound. So someone... Donald's doing an interview, and someone said, have you heard Michael's solo albums? They're so so much different than yours. And Donald said, you know, music is music. It's about sort of adapting and changing. I've done string quartet stuff. I've done psychedelic things. I love Donald's music. It's just how do you make it sound good?
Now, Donald, fans have come to know your music as harmonically complex, technically difficult, but you're self-taught?
Well, I had some training. I had some piano lessons when I was a kid, and then I had a summer at the Berklee School of Music, and in college I took some composition.
And more
but
important,
mostly,
weren't you also in a band with Chevy Chase once?
Well, we went to school together, so we were in some pickup bands together.
What did he play?
He played mostly the drums. He's a very, very good drummer, and also he's quite an excellent piano player.
Hey, he wanted to sit in at the Armory 3 years ago.
Yeah,
remember?
I remember that, yeah.
Well, last year you told an interviewer that it seems the more I practice, the worse I get. What do you mean by that?
That's actually true. I don't know. I think I started late. I started about 10 or 11, and I think my muscles were already, you know, not, you know, you have to be really a great pianist, you have to start when you're like 6 or something like that, or you have to start at -4 or something like that. You know?
In utero.
And, you know, my fourth and fifth finger a little, you know, they never really developed the way I wanted them to.
I do disagree a little bit because if we do a 12-week tour, there's a sweet spot around 7-8 weeks in when the whole band kind of looks over their shoulder and goes, "What? When did you just play?
Well,
we're doing that many shows that he starts to do, and
yeah,
and gets
well,
in there.
Yeah.
Well, do you think that if you had started younger, you would have become a jazz pianist?
I think I would have been a wonderful,
marvelous
jazz pianist.
Yeah,
but you know, there's nothing wrong with bringing this kind of quality to popular music.
No, and I think, you know, I sometimes think about doing a jazz album, some quintet or something.
I was wondering about that. Jazz standards or your own compositions?
Maybe a combination.
There was one idea floating around, remember?
Yeah.
Maybe the next album? We go past Isaac Hayes?
Who knows?
Don't know. Haven't thought about it.
Now, Michael, trumpet was your primary instrument.
Yeah, I started when I was 10.
And when did you start playing all the other? I mean, you play drums very well.
The gist is that trumpet is extremely physical. And I when I was 10, I started off and was very strong immediately and then kind of plateaued when I was about 10, 11 and couldn't play high notes and would practice 15 minutes and my lips were tired. So I'd sit down and play drums or piano.
And drums are not physical?
It's a different kind of physicality. There's the endurance factor. They're physical, but you can play all day long. Trumpet, the lips swell.
Chops.
You need to rest as much as you play. Mm. Piano, I would set the clock and practice for 20 minutes on trumpet, be exhausted. Then I would play piano for 90 minutes or sit and play drums for an hour. So that's where it sort of, you know.
But the hardest thing for most people when they're trying to learn drums is independence, playing a different thing with each hand and with your feet. This is something that just came naturally to you?
Well, I'm a limited drummer. I can't, you know, in terms of filling, the thing that I was always natural was feel and...
Yeah, I think, you know, the reason I asked Michael to try playing the drums was that at sound checks, you know, he's both in Steely Dan and the Duke's band, so over the years at sound checks, I'd hear him, like, before everyone assembled at the sound check, he'd get behind the drums and play a little bit. And I always noticed he had this, like, really, like, old-school feel. Sometimes he sounded a little bit like Herb Lavelle or one of these old, great studio drummers. And so that's why I asked him to take a shot at
that's
it.
That's the ultimate compliment.
I agree.
Now, I mentioned your mother was an entertainer who performed in the Catskills, but she suffered from stage fright. Don't you also, to some degree?
I used to, not so much anymore. My mother, she actually had a meltdown as she was about to go on Major Bowie's Amateur Hour in the radio, and that was the last time she ever sung. She was about 16 at the time.
I've always wondered about stage fright. What does that mean? You just start shivering and.
It's more a matter of there's various symptoms you can get, but basically it was it's kind of it gradually took its toll, and I used to get sick on the road and stuff like that from the stress, you know, that kind of thing.
Did you ever have to do the show in public in front of, not in the studio, but in front of many people?
All the time.
And so how does it feel? Did you get
the
same thing?
I just take
point?
Drugs. Anyway, you have
that
any
was my problem.
Oh, well, I was just joking. Yeah. my staff is really freaking out.
The word is out. I was just joking too.
Yeah, I mean,
Now, Michael, your next project also with Donald, or are you going to go off and do one of your own things again?
I started working on. Actually, I was going to ask Donald if he would sing a song. I have an idea for almost like what Quincy Jones did, Smackwater Jack. Mm-hmm. Something not derivative, but doing an arranging and producing album. Mm-hmm. With a couple of different singers, and I was thinking of asking Donald to do one song, but there are different things.
And Donald, the jazz album?
I'll think about it.
Meanwhile, we have this new album from Donald Fagen, produced by Michael Linhart. He also plays on it. It's called Sunken Condos. We're going to go out with one of the tracks, Miss Marlene. Thank you so much, both of you, for
being
on our show.
Thank
today.
You.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
All the pins fall down. Can't you hear the balls rumble? Can't you hear the balls rumble? I miss Marlene. We're still bold every Saturday.